today, a congressman who made a mark at the impeachment hearing, and Claire Malone from 538 on seven ways the impeachment process could affect the 2020 race. This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Thursday, November 14th. After the public hearing yesterday, I was able to speak with one of the standout questioners, Democrat Sean Patrick Maloney of New York. One thing I was curious about was his exchange with Ambassador Bill Taylor about an unusual interaction Taylor had with National Security Advisor John Bolton in Ukraine while the military assistance was still being held up. This was about a month after President Trump's phone call with President Zelensky, in which he appeared to link the military aid to political favors. Here's a portion of the Maloney-Taylor exchange. Congressman Maloney speaks first.
1 month later, on August 28th, you find yourself in Ukraine with the National Security Advisor, Mr. Bolton, right?
Yes, sir.
And you convey to him your concerns. You've testified to this previously about the withholding of military assistance. What does he say to you?
He says that he shares my concern, and he advises me to express that in a very special way to the Secretary of State.
Now, he's the National Security Advisor, works directly with the President, but he tells you that you should bring it up with the Secretary of State.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever sent a cable like that? How many times in your career, 40, 50 years, have you sent a cable directly to the Secretary of State?
Once.
This time?
Yes, sir.
In 50 years?
Rifle company commanders don't send cables, but yes, sir.
So the National Security Advisor, who can tell it to the President himself and who shares your concern, says you, the ambassador serving in Ukraine, should cable the Secretary of State directly, and you do so, don't you?
Yes, sir.
What'd the cable say, sir?
It's classified cable.
Without going into classified information.
Without going into classified, it says security assistance. It's what we've been talking about today. Security assistance to Ukraine at this particular time, as in previous time, is very important. Ukraine, I also make the point that we've also talked about here today, Ukraine is important for our national security, and we should support it.
A very interesting minute from yesterday's hours of testimony. When I spoke to Congressman Maloney last night after the hearing wrapped up, I asked him to elaborate on that very last thing we heard Ambassador Taylor say, that military assistance to Ukraine isn't just a good deed we're doing for a threatened foreign country, but also important to our own national security.
Well, that's a very good question. Of course, he could raise this issue directly with the president. Ambassador Taylor made clear that John Bolton said he shared Ambassador Taylor's concerns that it was crazy to be withholding the military assistance from Ukraine. And instead, he pushes them off towards the Secretary of State. And as you heard the ambassador say, one time in 50 years of public service has he sent a cable of that kind. And, of course, Pompeo ignores him. So you have some combination of passing the buck or ignoring important information from a seasoned diplomat like Ambassador Taylor. There's really no good explanation except probably the president was hell-bent on this course of conduct, and people like Bolton and Pompeo were trying to sidestep it.
Or Bolton was being frozen out because the president figured he didn't support the policy. But Taylor then told you he never got a direct answer to his plea to support Ukraine for the sake of our national security, as he said. He said no direct answer. Do you know if he got some indirect answer?
His testimony was that he didn't receive an answer, and he doesn't know what happened to his cable. It's one of the things we'd like to follow up on. And I want to stress, I don't know, but it is part of a pattern of a very suspicious and disappointing conduct by the Secretary of State, who, after all, was on the July 25th call and, of course, neglected to mention that for days and days after, even when this whole scandal broke. He was on President Trump's call with the Ukrainians, the famous call, and now we learn that he's getting a very unusual cable from his ambassador in Ukraine sounding the alarm about this, and he ignores it.
Congressman, for people who didn't see or hear it today, can you describe or elaborate in your own words on the case that Ambassador Taylor was making for this military aid to Ukraine being important to our national security, not just Ukraine's? Because I think many Americans see this political football that the aid had become as being just a good deed for a threatened foreign country.
Yeah, thank you for asking me that, because I know that some of the people I represent wonder why this is important. We don't assume that people understand all the ins and outs of this, so let me just quickly explain. I mean, you know, Ukraine is on the front lines with the Russians. They are in a active shooting war right now with Russian forces in the eastern part of the country, and the Russians invaded and occupied the area of Ukraine known as Crimea in 2014. Ukraine right now is the difference between containing the Russians or allowing the Russians to rebuild an empire that moves into the heart of Europe. And so what happens in Ukraine has enormous consequences for the freedom and security of all of our allies in Europe, and of course the whole transatlantic alliance, which has kept the peace for 70 years since the Second World War. And then beyond all that, you know, Ambassador Taylor did and Secretary Kent today did a eloquent job of explaining that this is a young country with a tremendous future and a natural strategic partner for the United States, and they depend on us. And they are right now losing soldiers every day. They've lost 14,000 Ukrainian citizens on Ukrainian territory to Russian forces. They are on the front line of freedom, and the United States has learned this difficult lesson in the past, that if we don't stand with our allies at the moment they're threatened by a nation like Russia that is on the march, we will regret it. And of course, to fail to do so the president can accomplish some shabby personal political objective to get an advantage or even to spread a smear about a political opponent here at home makes it all the worse.
So how close is this to your case for impeachment in a nutshell as of now? That President Trump violated his oath of office by twisting U.S. foreign policy to serve his own personal advantage in a way that ran contrary to the national security of the United States.
Yeah, I don't agree. I don't disagree with a word of that, but I would put it slightly differently, which is to say, I just want people to ask themselves, if you're listening and you're undecided about this, ask yourself whether it can be okay for an American president, any American president, to go around the world using the power of his office and American taxpayer dollars to get foreign leaders to drum up investigations against American political opponents. I mean, just imagine if Barack Obama was pressuring the leader of India to start an investigation of Mitt Romney a few years ago, what these Republicans would have said. If he was withholding U.S. military assistance to further that objective, they would be crystal clear that that is not just an impeachable offense, but something no American president can ever be permitted to do because it's so damaging to our democracy. So as a precedent, as something that we must take a stand against, I just can't think of anything more serious when you think about what it would mean. And if the Republican defense is, you know, so what? Yeah, he did it, but so what? Which I predict to you is where they'll end up. I just want to say, so what is where our democracy goes to die? It cannot be okay for this kind of conduct by a president of the United States. And that's why it's so important that the independent branch of government the founders gave us, the Congress, take a stand.
Then let me go even further down that road, Congressman, because I've been wondering, looking at your witness list for this week and next, how narrowly focused the Democrats' articles of impeachment might be on this one incident with Ukraine, as opposed to making a larger case that comes close to treason, that the president keeps tilting U.S. foreign policy to give aid and comfort to what Vladimir Putin wants, a weaker Western alliance so he can take more land in Europe, which the whole Western world thinks puts all our security at risk, and this is just one example of it.
Yes, I mean, I think you're getting at some very important issues that will form the heart of potential articles of impeachment. I don't want to prejudge what will happen when we submit a report to the Judiciary Committee, but if you're asking me, I think if you look at the Nixon articles of impeachment, you have a pretty good guide around the high-level issues of abuse of office, obstruction of Congress, and the like. And here, the abuse of office is what we've discussed. You know, using the presidency to try to smear a political opponent with foreign assistance, that just can't be okay. It cannot be okay for an American president to engage in that conduct. Our democracy cannot survive that type of conduct by any American president from either political party.
One of the main areas of pushback from the Republicans today was that the aid was not withheld, and the or it was restored anyway after a short time, and the investigations into the Bidens and the 2016 conspiracy theory were never launched. So since everyone backed down from this brink, even if it was corrupt to get that far, the ransom was never delivered and neither was the punishment. So it's a thin basis for the political death penalty, if you will, impeachment and removal. How would you respond to that?
Of all the arguments the Republicans make, this is one of the more head-scratching ones I've heard, because think about what they're saying. I mean, literally, we call it a whistleblower because when you blow the whistle, the play stops. In other words, the point of the whistleblower statute is to give a federal employee with knowledge of it, particularly in the classified context, a legal mechanism to stop the wrongdoing, to blow the whistle. That is precisely what happened here, and it is the only reason the evidence would suggest that the aid was released 2 days later, once three congressional committees were announcing investigations of this. In other words, the gig was up. And in addition, it's the only reason the Ukrainian president didn't actually give the interview to CNN that was negotiated with Giuliani that would have specifically started and publicly announced the investigation of the Bidens. In other words, the whistleblower stopped the wrongdoing. That is not to the president's credit. That is simply the way it's supposed to work, so we don't have to have the damage done to catch the wrongdoers. And that is the difference, perhaps, between a criminal conduct where you're trying to see an overt act. Here, we want that conduct stopped. They were going to lose these funds at the end of September. The Russians were literally waiting to see what would happen. And thank God the whistleblower did what he did. But none of that is to the president's credit. And the idea that the Republicans would try to use it as a defense is ridiculous.
We have just a few minutes left with New York Democratic Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, a member of the Intelligence Committee, who is one of the questioners today. We have Ambassador Yovanovitch testifying on Friday, the one who was fired as ambassador to Ukraine, an alleged victim of this Giuliani, Mulvaney, et cetera, plot. Then more witnesses Tuesday through Thursday next week. Can you give us a sense yet of how much more you expect after that?
You know, I don't know. I think you're going to see the lion's share of the testimony that we need to present to give the public the facts they need this week and next. Whether it continues beyond that, I'm not prepared to say. I think but by the end of next week, the witnesses that we've noticed will provide, I believe, a complete accounting for what happened. But that's not to say that there aren't other very important sources of evidence. But remember, the State Department has refused to produce documents that have been subpoenaed. They've got a pile of notes from all these witnesses, emails, text messages, other corroboration. Everything Ambassador Taylor testified to today that he put in quotes is because he took a note about it contemporaneously. He is a copious note taker. Why don't we have those documents? Why don't we have the emails that will flesh this out? So there are other sources of information, but we are also mindful of the fact that we need to present a case now in public. We believe we have a complete set of information to understand how serious the president's conduct was and what went on here. But it doesn't mean we won't stop trying to bring more evidence to the public. And people like Ambassador Bolton and Secretary Pompeo and Mick Mulvaney need to say what they know as well.
Well, we have 2 minutes left, and I think the court case that would allow John Bolton to testify, if it goes the right way, probably can't get resolved before you'll have to vote on articles of impeachment. But according to other witnesses, Bolton, with his position and credibility, called the shadow Ukraine policy a drug deal and ordered it reported to a National Security Council lawyer. How crucial is a public role for John Bolton in particular in persuading enough of the American public that an impeachable offense happened here?
look, we want Ambassador Bolton's evidence. Nothing is preventing him from coming to Congress as he has been requested to do and providing that evidence. We have heard from three of his deputies who managed to fulfill their legal obligations and get down here and do the right thing. Ambassador Bolton was negotiating a $2 million book advance while he was withholding his testimony, which almost certainly contributed to the size of the money he received to sell this story rather than provide it to the people's representatives in Congress. That's one of the most cynical and disgusting things I've ever seen in public life, and Ambassador Bolton should be ashamed of himself. But if he wants to come and testify, he sure does have important information. We need to hear it. He should get down here and provide it, and nothing is preventing him from doing so.
You think this is only about a lucrative book deal on Bolton's part? Because he doesn't seem to be on the president's side.
Look, I don't say he's going to be a helpful witness to the president. What I'm telling you is that I think it's outrageous that someone is negotiating a book deal for the same information, a book covering the same events, no doubt, that he is being called to testify on before Congress. And I don't have any idea how big a role that played in this, only that it was going on simultaneously. What I do know is that you've got an important witness who, unlike his deputies, three of them, who have exactly the same legal issues, who all came down here and testified truthfully and fully, he has refused to do so. That's not leadership. It's a cynical effort to delay. And that's how we interpret his desire to litigate this. And now to learn that he had a financial motive to do it as well just breeds the kind of cynicism I think we have too much of in American politics.
Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Now, Claire Malone, senior political writer for 538. She's got an article called The Seven Ways Impeachment Could Shape the 2020 Election. We jumped right in on her scenario number one. Things are bad for Trump and very good for Democrats.
Yes. In this scenario, the public impeachment hearings are really damning for Trump and the Republicans. The American public buys into the fact that he should be impeached and removed from office. They pressure their maybe people from swing states pressure their Republican senators who are up for election in 2020. And those people decide to vote to remove him from office in the Senate trial. Now, I should say here, I don't necessarily think that's a very likely scenario, but it is a potential scenario, right, that some of these Republican senators who are up for re-election could kind of cave. And in that scenario, the president would be removed from office and, a Democratic nominee would win the election, given the tide turning against the Republican Party.
But scenario two, things are bad for Trump, but okay for Republicans.
Right. In that scenario, okay, Trump is removed from office or, you know, resigns from office. Mike Pence becomes the president, and Mike Pence ends up winning the general election, in part because Republican voters are either if they're Trump hardcore Trump supporters, they're sort of voting on revenge. Or if they're those reluctant Trump voters that I talk about sometimes who didn't love Trump, they might feel comforted by Mike Pence at the wheel and say, okay. So in that case, Democrats would have gotten rid of Trump, but perhaps still have a President Pence.
One scenario in that section, scenario number two, things are bad for Trump, but okay for Republicans. One of your scenarios within that is the Republican Civil War. What's that?
That is, let's say, a figure like Mitt Romney kind of rises up and says, we can no longer have this guy in office. You know, someone like Jeff Flake, a former senator, has already said Trump should be impeached. And that scenario kind of imagines a few of these figures who behind the scenes are very critical of Trump saying, we're going to have a primary challenger for Trump that's actually real. We're going to try to get support. And we know that we probably won't win the primary, but we might draw attention to Trump's flaws. We might draw away some, you know, we might weaken him in the general election. And in that scenario, a Democratic nominee might win the election, and the Republicans are kind of left with this Trumpism versus what they were before. And this is something that we thought a lot about in 2016. I wrote a lot about in 2016 is the way that the Republican Party has become so fully inhabited by Trump. It's a very personality-driven party now. And this kind of imagines a conflict between the old and the new.
And listeners, we could take a few phone calls for Claire Malone from 538 with anything you want to say or ask about ways that impeachment could affect the 2020 election. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Scenario number three, things go very well for Trump and backfire on Democrats.
In the worst case scenario for that, the American people get angry at Democrats for having put the country through an impeachment trial. And they say, we are not only reelecting Trump, but all of you House Democrats from swing districts who, you know, retook the House for Democrats in 2018, we're voting you out. And the control of the Congress turns fully to the Republicans, and the Republicans have the White House. So that's kind of the Democrats went out on a limb with impeachment, and they are punished for having done so.
The way we get to seven is that your three main scenarios have sub-scenarios. And one of them is what you call the weird mixed bag in this category of utter destruction for the Democrats.
That one is that Democrats would lose the presidency, but perhaps take the Senate. And in that scenario, Democratic voters in these swing states punish Republican senators who they think should have voted the president to be removed from office. So it's kind of this truly bizarre split ticket sort of thing where they take the chamber that they don't have right now, but they lose the presidency.
Being data crunchers at 538, is there anything that already suggests which one of these seven scenarios is the most likely?
Well, I think right now my thinking goes back to the 2016 election and the electoral college popular vote split. So I think that's a decently likely scenario. If you take a look at swing states and let's say Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, states like that. The New York Times did a poll a couple weeks ago of how popular impeachment is in those states, and it's not that popular. Impeachment and removal from office in those states is not that popular. Trump is still doing decently well in those states that are kind of perhaps going to be the tipping point states. So I'm really honestly watching a very small subset of voters and how they react to the Republican narrative of impeachment and the Democratic narrative of impeachment, because I think those either reluctant Trump voters or those Obama-Trump voters, I think they're very much swayable. A lot of this depends on who the Democrats nominate. I have a little bit of trouble right now. Things could change. But right now, I have trouble seeing Elizabeth Warren winning a Wisconsin or a Michigan. And so I think that the nominee will play a large part in determining, you know, how people vote. Because if Joe Biden probably has, and the polling shows this, a much better chance of winning those upper Midwestern states.
So how do you see Nancy Pelosi playing the impeachment card in a way that she thinks will help the Democrats in 2020, both presidential and congressional? Or do you think she's gotten to the point where she's ignoring that and we just have to do this because he's so bad?
Well, I think that the House Democrats want the impeachment vote to take place decently quickly, either in December or early January. They want it kind of done and wrapped up before the Iowa caucuses on February 3rd. Now, who knows when the Senate vote will be? Obviously, Mitch McConnell is in charge of that. But I think they want to get it wrapped up earlier in the year rather than later in the year, so that it perhaps has, if there are negative effects, they redound less on Democrats.
Claire Malone, senior political writer for 538. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Before we go, as part of our impeachment coverage, we're inviting podcast listeners to try your hand at writing your own article of impeachment. One article of impeachment that accuses the president of a high crime and states how he committed it. After we get some, we'll invite Trump defenders to call in and push back. Here's an example that a listener has already phoned in, then we'll tell you how you can do this too.
The president has conspired to corrupt and degrade public understanding by using formal channels to endorse and promote discredited information. For example, the idea that Ukraine and not Russia meddled in U.S. elections. In addition to turning us into a country of fools, This violation of public trust has serious ramifications for the security of the nation. To be ignorant and misinformed is to be vulnerable. The president and his allies knowingly mislead the American people, and in this way, leave us open to attack and harm.
Thanks, Kim Evans from Ithaca, New York. If you'd like to propose an article of impeachment, write it down, then call our voicemail to record it at 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255. Or if you'd rather do it in writing, we have a webpage with a form you can use. That's at impeachmentpodcast.org, impeachmentpodcast.org. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.